This episode is sponsored by Lockheed Martin. At Lockheed Martin, veterans are at the center of everything they do. In fact, one in five of their employees has served in uniform. Lockheed Martin is proud to help men and women like you successfully transition into civilian careers. Join Lockheed Martin and you will find opportunities to take on the same kind of long-term, challenging assignments you tackled while in the military. Whether you're on active duty, transitioning, or already embarking on your civilian career, Lockheed Martin's Military Connect is your online community for professional support. You can find out more at lockheedmartin.bravenew.com. That's lockheedmartin.bravenew.com. Welcome back to Beyond the Uniform. I'm Justin Asiri, and my goal is to help military veterans thrive in their civilian career. Today is episode number 219 with Travis Mills.
I actually remember everything that day. I set my backpack on the ground. I got thrown from the right side of my left side of my face. I rolled over. I saw what happened. The right arm, right leg were gone. Left leg was dangling, barely connected, and my left arm was blown out pretty good at the wrist. So my medic ran up to me to work on me. I told him, you know, you're not going to fix me. Don't worry about it. I just figured I was going to die because I've seen guys die for a lot less. But he decided to work on me anyway, and they got me bandaged up enough to get me on the helicopter.
Well, my guest today, Travis Mills, is one of only five veterans of the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan to survive his quadruple amputee injuries. His life and story since then are inspiring, including becoming a New York Times best-selling author, starting the Travis Mills Foundation to help other recalibrated warriors, to being the subject of an upcoming major motion picture release. He lives his motto, never give up, never quit. As always, at beyondtheuniform.io, you'll find other episodes just like this to help military veterans in their civilian career, as well as our coaching program designed to pair you one-on-one in an environment with subsidized coaches to help you figure out your next career move. So with that, let's dive in to my conversation with Travis Mills. Well, joining me today in Augusta, Maine is Travis Mills. Travis, welcome to Beyond the Uniform.
Absolutely. Hey, thanks so much. Appreciate you having me.
So for listeners, I wanted to give a quick background. Travis is the president of the Travis Mills Group. He's the president of the Travis Mills Foundation. He is a New York Times best-selling author of the book Tough as They Come. On April 10th, 2012, while a staff sergeant in the Army, Travis was on a mission during his third tour of duty in Afghanistan. He set his backpack down and a buried IED exploded on impact. When he woke up 4 days later on his 25th birthday, he had lost all four limbs. Travis is one of only five veterans of the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan to survive his quadruple amputee injuries. His journey since then has been one of hard work, inspiration, and helping other combat-injured vets. Last summer, Travis and the Travis Mills Foundation opened a fully accessible facility for recalibrated warriors and their families. For the second year, the retreat offers at no cost adaptive sports, recreation, spa services, chef-prepared meals, and whatever else the family needs to rest, relax, and reconnect. Travis is also an in-demand motivational speaker and the co-owner of a lodge and marina. His story is set to be the subject of a major motion picture, rumored to be directed by Sylvester Stallone with co-star Adam Driver. He is also the subject of the award-winning documentary, Travis, A Soldier's Story. So, Travis, maybe to start things off, you know, if you're open to talking about it, what do you remember from your injury on April 10th? And if you could take us through the ensuing 19-month recovery you faced.
Absolutely. And first off, great introduction. Man, I sound great on paper, I'll tell you. But I actually remember everything that day. I set my backpack on the ground. I got thrown from the right side of my left side of my face. I rolled over. I saw what happened. The right arm, right leg were gone. Left leg was dangling, barely connected, and my left arm was blown out pretty good at the wrist. So my medic ran up to me to work on me. I told him, you know, you're not going to fix me. Don't worry about it. I just figured I was going to die because I've seen guys die for a lot less. But he decided to work on me anyway, and they got me bandaged up enough to get me on the helicopter. and to the operating room. In the operating room, they went ahead and they knocked me out because I was starting to try to fight them about, you know, sitting down. I kept trying to get up, and they were just like, you know, time to go to sleep. So they knocked me out, and they worked on me for like 14 hours. And it was kind of crazy. They could have loosened one tourniquet and let me go, but they decided to keep filling me back up with blood that I kept losing and pump air in my lungs and keep going for, 14 hours to make sure I could come home. And, that was on the 10th of April. And then when they got me critical but stable, I started to recover. They flew me to Bagram from Kandahar. And when I was in Bagram, my left hand had necrotized. It had died, so they cut that off too. So I was a quadruple amputee. And then 2 days later, like you said, on my birthday, I woke up for the first time to find out what had happened. And I just had to, take a step back and realize life's going to be different from now on. Question everything, you know, am I a bad person? Why did this happen? You know, why didn't I just die? And then my wife, you know, I met her back at Walter Reed on the 17th of April. I told her, take what we have and go. You know, don't worry about it. I don't expect you to stay and put up with this. We had a six-month-old at the time, and she was 23. And she's like, that's not how this works. We're going to get through this together. So I guess I just started my recovery, and every day I worked harder to get stronger and do more. It took me 5 weeks to get an arm. It took me 2 months just about to walk. And, every day I knew that the only thing that was important now is to recover, get better, and be there for my family. And I didn't ever want to feel like a burden. So I thought the more I can do independently, you know, the better chances I have at coming out of this, you know, with my wife and my daughter, and not, you know, feeling that I'm just in the way. So it was kind of crazy. We were doing a lot of cool things, and we had a lot of fun with it.
It's unreal. I mean, right before, earlier this morning, I was watching the trailer for your documentary, which I'll put in the show notes for listeners. But it's very difficult to make it through that trailer without choking up. It's just incredible to see the resilience you display and the role that it seems like your family played in motivating this recovery. And one of the things I wanted to ask about is, you know, you've called yourself a recalibrated warrior. I'm just kind of curious how you view that, and then how you stay so resilient and positive in the face of so much adversity.
Yeah, so the recalibrated warrior came about because, I didn't truly like being called wounded. I didn't like being called, oh, you're one of them wounded warriors. And I'm like, aha, I used to be wounded. I have scars now. And just the look of pity that you get when people see you and say, oh, you're one of them wounded guys. And it's like, they emphasize it. So I was like, I'm just Travis, but if you're going to call me a warrior, you can call me recalibrated. And I had to reset some things, and I'm good to go. And I guess it was just, you know, that was my own stubbornness and my ego that got, not in the way, but got me going. And then, as far as my attitude, I had my wife and my daughter there by my side. My daughter was, 6 months old, so I realized I was going to be her dad. I was going to be the one that was there for her, and I just had to get better. And my wife was there by my side to help me, you know, when I started taking my first steps or feeding myself and dressing myself and doing that sort of stuff. So, you know, it was a long road. 19 months is a long time, but truly it was supposed to take me 3 years to get better, and I decided that wasn't going to happen, so I kept pushing forward. And at the end of the day, I can't change what happened. I can't change my situation. I can always make sure my attitude's great. I can reminisce the past instead of dwell on it, and I can still, you know, live my life to the fullest with my family.
That's incredible. I mean, I love that. I love that sense of I don't have the right word for it, but it's like the sense of proactivity and the sense of ownership of, you know, what can I control? What can I take charge of, and focusing on that? And it's inspiring. What was the starting point of the Travis Mills Foundation?
Actually, it was caregiver packages overseas. A lot of people send care packages over, and that's great. But a lot of things we got were kind of like, oh, this is nice that they thought of us. I wanted to be like, oh, no, guys, here's some Orbit gum for when you patrol. Here's some pepper beef jerky because it's the best tasting stuff out there. Here's the M&Ms with peanut butter in them. Why would you not want peanut butter M&Ms? And I just thought, I know what these guys really want, you know. And then it transitioned after I went on a trip to Colorado and learned how to go downhill mountain biking and kayaking and rafting, canoeing, and all that stuff. And I thought, wow, this is awesome. and I could do it independently, but be there with my family. Because I was always worried, what am I going to be able to do with my family? I can't throw football. I can't, you know, kick a soccer ball, really. And how am I going to be active with them? And then I found it in activities like, you know, snowboarding and all that. And we wanted to bring some families up because a lot of guys didn't get to take their spouses on these trips. So we wanted to bring families out. So we did that. And then it just kind of grew and grew, a snowball effect. And here we are, you know, 5 years after the foundation started. And, you know, we host 130 to 140 families this year. We haven't ended the year yet, so we're just about done. We've got 3 weeks left. About 8 families per week. They come up, no cost to them. And it's all about giving back, saying thanks for your service. We appreciate, you know, your sacrifice to let you know you can still be an active member in society and your family, and to always have confidence and get out there and try things. So it's been really a wonderful experience. I'm grateful for the opportunities that I have to do this work, and then also know that all the funds that come in, all the money that's raised, goes towards the project. I don't take any money. None of my board gets paid for this. It's all about giving back and doing the right thing.
That's incredible. What is, you know, you've got, when I was reading through that bio, there's, it seems like there is so much going on in your life. Could you paint the picture of, like, what does a typical day look like for you between being a best-selling author, the Travis Mills Group, the Travis Mills Foundation, just everything you have going on? How does your day usually play out?
Well, every day is different. So last week I started my week on Tuesday in New York. Then I flew to Dallas. Then I went from Dallas to Detroit, then Detroit to California. I got back 2 days ago. I had an event last night, and then I'm actually driving to Boston today for an event. So I'm all over the map, but it's all different. You know, one day I'm at my marina, one day I'm at home helping out with the kids the best I can, and you know, the next day I'm on the road speaking. I also am a part owner of an insurance company now, so I do some work with the insurance sector of supplemental stuff.
That's awesome. What about, you know, since your injury, you've become an in-demand motivational speaker, and what has that experience been like? And if there's any notable or memorable experiences that stand out from your speaking events?
You know, there are, and I'm glad that everything's, it's really all synergy. I go and I speak somewhere, like I spoke to Cintas, the uniform company, $6 billion company, right? I spoke to them, they found out about the foundation, they wanted to help, so they bought Christmas presents for all the families that came up for the last week, or the week before Christmas in December, that were all affected last year by the hurricane Harvey, I believe, that came through and you know, flooded and wrecked some stuff. So we brought families out that was affected, and Cintas, you know, bought their Christmas presents. Boeing sponsored the week. We have just wonderful people that I speak to because they're a big company. They need a corporate speaker like me. And then they find out about the foundation, and they do that. They all buy a copy of my book. So I guess it's just everybody working together, wanting to do good, wanting to give back, and understanding the drive that that we have at the foundation, as well as just my personal drive to keep succeeding and do whatever I can to be successful.
And what motivated you to write Tough As They Come? And I'm also curious what that process was like. I know a lot of the people listening are on active duty, and some of them are, you know, thinking of potentially being an author. So what motivated that? And then what was the writing experience like?
What motivated was people liked my demeanor, my attitude, how I carried myself. I always kept myself happy and going. And then the experience of writing was pretty simple, actually. I just had a collaborative author, Marcus Brotherton, who is very, very good at what he does, I guess, and you could say. And I just talked to him on the phone, you know, some days 6 hours, some days 3 hours. He went back and transcribed and wrote it. And then when he was done with that, he would send it to me. I'd reread it. I would fix it, plug in any changes. He'd redo it. And we just kind of keep going that methodical method. And it came out very well. I don't think there's anything in that book that anybody can say I lied about, or they can say, like, that's not true about him, or, you know, just things like that. It was just a fun experience. I was able to tell my story, and I think it's affected a lot of people in a positive way.
Well, you know, because I am struck by just how upbeat and you are. Do you view yourself as always having been like that? Was there something that changed in you to kind of give you that attitude, or has that kind of always been part of who you are?
No, it's absolutely who I've always been. I've always been like this, joking and fun and lighthearted. You know, I'll be honest, it wasn't easy for me at first to, like, have people stare at me and look at me, because I went from a 6'3", 250-pound, like, you know, bench press anything, curl anything, and ruck march anywhere kind of guy to 140 pounds with no arms and legs. So I couldn't look in the mirror for a while. I couldn't accept what happened, and it really wasn't a very pleasant thing. But, you know, through my recovery, through meeting people in the same situation, through my therapists and doctors and prosthetists at Walter Reed, you know, regaining that confidence came very quick. And then just going out there and being a voice for people in my situation or people in a situation that's, you know, a struggle is really just something I enjoy doing.
How do you feel about your story being turned into a major motion picture?
Well, I mean, hey, if they tell the right story, I'm all about it. You know, to make sure that it's covered the right way, which I think they will. I think they're going to hopefully get moving on that soon. You know, it's obviously, you know, up in the air with Fox 21st Century, who was buying the rights, and now Comcast or Disney's buying them out. So we're on a small freeze. Nothing's been decided yet. But you know, if it gets turned into a movie, I think it will be a heartwarming, touching movie. My wife and I have a great love story. The fact my father-in-law moved in with us, you know, when I was, you know, fairly new being injured, didn't really know him that well, and we gained a really great friendship. I think there's really good things out there people are going to relate to, and we don't have to make it political or one side or the other. We just, you know, just kind of have fun with it. It might be the next Forrest Gump is what I'm hoping for, something that, you know, on TBS in 20 years, everybody's going to watch on a Saturday afternoon that's rainy. That would be good.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And, you know, one thing that stands out from your story, it just seems like paying it forward is really important to you. Where does that come from? Like, what is that? Why is paying it forward so critical to you?
Well, I mean, in my darkest hour, I guess, my time of need, people came and stepped up to the plate, and they were there. They helped my wife. They helped my daughter and me, and they were always pushing forward to do good things, not because they had to, because they wanted to. And, you know, my wife and I want to give back. We want to repay that and also, you know, keep striving to do better and striving to give back more. So the foundation is important to us to make sure that it thrives, make sure people understand the mission is to get these service members back out there doing things adaptively with their families, having confidence in themselves. You know, it's important people know that the foundation is not there for my benefit, for me to make a paycheck, for my board to get paid. We don't get paid. You know, we're not trying to take money away from this. It's all about just giving back and doing the absolute right thing that you need to do.
What about what advice do you have for people going through the transition from active duty to starting their civilian career? You had talked about like skilled trades, and just any advice you have on approaching that transition?
I think that people need to be well informed when they get out of the military. They got to make sure they understand, you know, a couple things. The first thing is you're not going to have health care anymore. You're not going to be getting paid on a regular basis, and life's going to come at you fast. That's why the military does all the courses to get you prepared, whether you take them serious or not. But also, you know, you find out what trade jobs are out there that can, you know, really help you make the salary or the money that you want to make. And Mike Rowe and his Mike Rowe Works page is what really opens the doors to that. If you want to go to college, that's great. Make sure you know what you want to go to college for. Because it's not easy. It's not like you're going to be better at college because you were in the military. But it's just about being well-informed and understanding what, you know, what do you think success looks like, and how can you make sure that you can attain that goal of success.
And another thing I wanted to ask is for people listening, maybe someone listening is a veteran who was wounded in their service, or maybe it's someone who's on active duty or a veteran who isn't wounded but is facing a challenge in their life right now. What words would you offer for either of those people, someone injured right now or someone who's just in the thick of the hurricane of just something going on in their life?
Well, I mean, a couple things. Like I said, my life lessons I always tell people is, number one, don't dwell on the past. You can't change what happened yesterday. I can't change what happened 6 years ago. But I can make sure that I can reminisce the 25 years they have with Arms and Legs, and then keep pushing forward for the last 6 years. They've been pretty great as well. And the next thing is, you can't always control your situation, but you can always control your attitude. Every morning I'm going to wake up with no arms, no legs. You know, it's going to be a reoccurring thing every time I get out of bed. And that's fine. That's my situation. But it's up to me to make sure I got the best attitude about it, make sure that I'm pushing forward to be a great role model for my children, as well as, you know, the husband that my wife needs me to be. So just understand that, you know, you can always make sure your attitude's the right, you know, in the right way for you, because the situations, they're going to keep coming. And that's called life. But besides for that, my slogan is always never give up, never quit. And I hope people live by that, because that's what I firmly believe. And I'm thankful to have, you know, the mindset that I have and the abilities that I have. So that's why I keep pushing forward every day.
Awesome. Well, I always like to keep the last question open-ended, which is, what have we not talked about today that you want to make sure that listeners know?
Well, TravisMills.org for all your Travis Mills needs. Check the documentary out on Netflix if you type the name Travis. And great, exciting news in my life. My wife and I, fortunately, 13 months ago, had our second child, our son. His name is Dax, D-A-X, after the medics Daniel and Alexander, the guys that saved me. We pushed our names together, made Dax out of it, because we figured, you know what, they made it possible for me to be here. Might as well make them realize or understand and know that I'm grateful, thankful for their quick work and their actions on the battlefield to make sure that I got home to my family so I could have another child. So I appreciate everybody that went into it. And I also think life's about perspective. For those that have lost family in the military, or those that are, you know, suffering because they don't have a husband or a son or a daughter or uncle anymore, that's the reason I keep going forward, because I know that I could have paid more of a price and I didn't. I'm grateful to be here, and I'm always going to be the one that's pushing forward, because I don't want to be selfish and not be grateful to still be around when so many of my friends didn't get the ability or opportunity to still be here.
That's awesome. And for listeners, in the show notes for this episode, we'll have links to all sorts of articles and videos with Travis. There's one in People magazine that has a lot of photos of Travis and his family and talks about the naming of his son who was recently born. And, you know, I seem to remember from the video, I think that those medics had tourniquets on all four of your limbs within something crazy, like within 20 seconds, they had tourniquets on all four of your limbs, which is just really incredible. But it's beautiful to see how you're honoring them with Dax, and what an incredible, you know, namesake for him to have that heritage.
Yep, absolutely. And check out the Down East magazine from November 1st. It's going to be something I hope you enjoy, and you might see a familiar face on the cover.
That is awesome. I'll put a link in that for the show notes as well. Well, Travis, thank you so much for your time. I love that slogan of never give up and never quit, and you are certainly a living example of that, and I know that your work is touching and inspiring many. And so for listeners, be sure to check out TravisMills.org. Check out the show notes for links to the videos and the Netflix, everything. And thank you so much for your time today, Travis.
Hey, I wish everybody the best. Thanks for your time. I appreciate it. Have a great one, and take care.
Thanks, brother. Thanks for listening to this episode of Beyond the Uniform. There are over 200 free episodes at beyondtheuniform.io. They're classified by the industry of focus, the functional role the person plays, and more. Beyond the Uniform is hosted, produced, and edited by me, Justin Asiri. Our Director of Outreach, responsible for sponsorship and guest episodes, is Steve Bain. Our Editor, responsible for the show notes and text transcripts for all episodes, is Kathleen Dillon. Our Data Analytics and Insights Advisor is Andrew Woolridge. If you are enjoying Beyond the Uniform, you can help us out by telling your veterans and friends in the military about this free resource. There is more information on the website about how you can sponsor an episode or donate to our program to help us grow the work that we're doing. Be sure to check out the coaching section of beyondtheuniform.io, where you can be paired with professional, subsidized coaches to help you figure out your next career move. You can sign up for our newsletter to be up to date on the latest happenings at Beyond the Uniform. And in each show notes section, there is a link to audible.com, which is providing a free audiobook of your choice to Beyond the Uniform listeners. You get a free book of your choosing, and Beyond the Uniform gets $15 to subsidize the cost of the show, regardless of whether you can continue with audible.com or not. Check that out and more in the show notes for this episode. Keep the feedback coming. Let me know what resources would help you in your career, and we'll do our best to make that happen. Take care, be safe, and I'll be back next week with more interviews with military veterans about their civilian career.